morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone. Good morning, folks. Welcome again to Democratic Perspective. Steve Williamson here, and sitting across from me
is Mike Cosentino. We are Democratic Perspective for this morning, and we have an official, bona fide Democratic insider here. We're going to find out everything there ever was to know about the Democratic Party and why they screw up. Anyway, Doug Ballard is here. Good morning, Doug.
Good morning, guys.
Doug was... is a resident of Coconino County. He ran for office in 2012 for the House, State House.
Great candidate.
He's a great candidate. Sorry you didn't win that. You were chair of the Progressive Democrats of Northern Arizona and two-time chair of the Coconino County Democratic Party, which is, I think, where I met you. And you've been on the state committee, and you're a delegate to the Democratic National Conventions and a DNC member. And chair of the ADP Bylaws Committee. So you're an insider's insider, right, Mike?
Well,
he's the guy in the know about all the secret levers of power of the Democratic Party, which don't exist.
You know, it's the liberal secret handshake.
Yeah. Also don't exist. But all right, Doug spoke recently at a Democrats of the Red Rocks breakfast, and there were a lot of questions and. I guess a lot of people, Doug, explain to us a little bit about the structure of the Democratic Party, because a lot of the questions, like, you know, if you're a Democrat and you get on these lists, and I get fundraising letters from, you know, they want like $3 or something, you know, but we know they actually want more than $3. But I get like dozens of these, and I know Mike does.
Well, the Democratic Party is, you know, consists of a lot of different organizations. And, you know, the face of the Democratic Party is often seen as, you know, those people who are elected to Congress or the Senate. And the DNC itself is of course, a central organizing element of the party. But you also have groups called the DSCC, Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee, the DCCC, Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee,
and that's for the House. There is even the House candidate.
That's for getting people elected to the House. The other one was for people getting elected to the Senate. Then there's the DLCC, the Democratic Legislative Campaign Committee. And these are all separate organizations that raise money on their own. And so a lot of times when you see these fundraising things come through, there'll be maybe the DCCC, or it'll be the DSCC, or it'll be the DLCC. And it'd also be the DNC. And that's just kind of the nature of the beast. And the Republicans have the same basic structure.
I think a lot of Democrats that know what's going on, you know, pick one of the, or two, or all of them as their favorite. You know, I have the DCCC is my favorite. I will occasionally send them some money.
Why is it they always want $3? That's
clickbait, as they call it now. That's to get you to click.
All right.
To clarify, you got the office holders, and then you got all these Democratic organizations that are the Democratic Party.
Right. So my question, Mike, and sorry to interrupt you, was
ask
what does the DNC actually do?
That's what everybody wants to know.
These $3 we send them.
Well, obviously, I think what we do, and this is my first term on the DNC. It's a 4-year term.
Attention. We just do the show.
That's right. It really is to provide, you know, strategy and support the grassroots efforts of the Democratic Party. I forgot to mention OFA, Organizing for America, which has kind of been a bit of a shadow group to the DNC.
But that was a big deal because it got Obama elected twice.
Well, it was a big deal, but it didn't do the DNC any particular good. What it was organized to do, of course, was to elect the president, and I'm a big OFA fan, big OFA member, but it took a lot of that organizing energy and talent out of the DNC, for an organization whose purpose was to elect and reelect the president, which was wonderful, but it left a hollowed out DNC in terms of doing the same, much of the same thing that that OFA might do on a broader basis, in terms of campaign support, in terms of you know, all those types of things that we do to get Democrats elected.
So how large is the DNC, and what is it? What do they do with all these $3? I mean, that we send. Yeah. I mean, what? How large is the organization, and what exactly does it do that these other organizations don't do? They raise money for more specific groups, like congressional candidates, right?
Well, correct. Now, the DCCC, of course, is the big fundraising body for that. Right now, in terms of staffing, we're in a transition period. Chairman Perez has asked for the resignation letters from all the staff. In his effort to reshape the DNC. Relative to small dollar donations, I think that's really a function of Post-Citizens United World. The Republican Party has many very large billionaire donors. You know, you can go through the list, the Koch brothers, Adelson, and whatnot. The Democratic Party relies on small dollar donors. And I would argue that that's a much more democratic way of doing business.
Amen.
And I know those requests get old, but it's because we don't have the backing of many, you know, very, very well-heeled special interest groups.
Let me frame this.
Mike, I just want to say you were talking about the Mercer family donations last week,
right? I was.
But I want to talk about many small donations, though, Doug, does it take to equal guys, billionaires pouring millions and millions and hundreds of millions of dollars into dark money, right, Mike? I mean,
well, I don't know the specific answer to that, except that their strength in terms of the Republicans is, of course, the deep, deep pockets they have, and we'll never be able to outspend them. But what we have been able to do, and what we will continue to be able to do, is to out-organize them and basically have people power working the neighborhoods, working. I remember when I ran in 2012, my Republican opponent, or one of them, you know, had commented to somebody that that we really out-organized them. They way outspent us, but we really out-organized them. So it's really that level of people power, I think, that we have that is our advantage.
So in some cases, obviously, money is more important than others' organization. So you have, just to get us where we are right now with this, with Doug Ballard on the show this morning, talking about Democratic insider stuff. He's a member of the DNC. He's been a Democratic candidate in Arizona. You had the Democratic Party that lost an election that everybody thought they were going to win. And then the organization you just became a member of, the Democratic National Committee, just had an election. And elected Tom Perez as the chair and Keith Ellison as the deputy chair, which was probably let's start with that. Well, that was a smart political move, I guess. Ellison and Perez were running against each other. And as soon as Perez got elected, he appointed, the way I understand it, Ellison as his deputy. We kind of wish that Hillary would have done that with Bernie, at least some of us, but
sure.
But go ahead. What's the state of that organization? So what is, you know, what are they going to, where are they going from here?
Sure. I'll tell you, the election itself was absolutely fascinating. But there was a common theme from all of the candidates. And I want to start with that if I could. And that was to really start rebuilding the party at the local level. At the state level, at the local level. And so I think we're going to be seeing a lot more resources there. And that was a big theme of Tom Perez. It was a big theme of Keith Ellison, basically getting back to our grassroots organizing. So there wasn't a lot of, there weren't a lot of policy differences between the two candidates. I ended up voting for Keith Ellison in the first round of voting. Tom Perez came very, very close to winning it on first round voting. We go through multiple ballots until one candidate gets over 50%. But what happened, of course, is Tom came within one vote on first ballot of winning, and he won on second ballot. And the first thing he did was to welcome Keith Ellison on stage and appoint him as deputy chair. Yeah, and so what they've been doing is going on an extensive listening tour around the country. One of the things that that I think is really important. One of the things I talked about when I talked to candidates, and one of the things that the candidates also, I think, picked up on, was the need to work together. The Democratic Party has many silos. And we talked about some of those silos before, you know, the DCCC, OFA, and whatnot, oftentimes pursuing different agendas and oftentimes feeling in competition with one another for resources. And so the big theme, I think, that both Keith and Tom are bringing is the need to bring all these organizations together and to work together. And I have great, great hopes for that. And I think they're off to a great start right now simply by going out and listening to these different organizations, listening to these different activist groups.
That's very true. Anybody that's ever worked politics, Republican or Democrat, everybody's had the experience with the national party or the state party coming into your local office and you know, and saying, well, go get some coffee. The pros are here now. And that's not necessarily a good working relationship, with, you know, for grassroots input into a party. So that's good to hear that they're going around listening. Some of us fondly remember, when Howard Dean was chair and the 50 state concept that, you know, we weren't going to just work on Chicago and New York and California. Especially since we have Doug Ballard here this morning, who is representing, or at least going to attempt to represent, rural Arizona in his job with the Democratic Party, that a philosophy like Dean's was to get all 50 states to say, you know what, we're not going to give up Mississippi, or we're not going to give up Arizona because it's a red state. We're not going to give up Kentucky. We got people there. We got organization there. So I want to feel like what are you guys going to do toward that end, or you got a whole different idea or what?
Well, the 50 state strategy I think was the smartest thing that the Democratic Party did under the guidance.
Knew there's a reason I like this guy.
and of course, you know that the party went away from that.
Yes,
and
did.
I think to our detriment. And both Tom Perez, Keith Ellison, and the other candidates, Jamie Harrison and all the other candidates, talked about in their campaigns about a robust 50-state strategy. And what that's going to get down to is really investing resources, money, into our state party. Not the DNC coming in and telling people what to do, but providing the resources so that the parties themselves, local parties themselves, can develop the strategies that they know will work the best. And I'm very, very encouraged by that.
Let's just explain a little bit, folks. The temptation in politics is to spend all your money in elections, because winning elections is how you get power. So the argument in the Democratic Party was they took all the money and they invested in elections they thought they could win. But that let the parties in places like Arizona and Idaho and Wyoming atrophy, because they had no support, because the National Party decided that not to invest in them.
Well, you know, we don't, because we have such a hot topic this morning, we actually have a call in. And
we normally don't allow that kind of thing.
Well, no, because we don't even let people know where we are located.
Right.
Are you going to take this call?
Yeah. Is there anybody there? All I hear is silence. What do you think, Mike?
Well, you know, I think that's evidence. That's evidence I think that's evidence of Silent Gary here calling from BFE, Minnesota.
Silent Gary.
Yeah. The capital of.
Well, you know, he's just true to his name. Silent Gary was a member of the Democratic Perspective team here. And was our great researcher for a long time. He always came up with these great facts because, you know, I deal with emotions and everybody else deals with facts on the show. But,
he moved to the Democratic hellhole of Minnesota, right, Gary? Do you already regret getting up there with all those Democrats' economies that collapsed in Minnesota, right?
That miserable place where they spend money on education, they give a crap about old people, they try to feed them, and that, you know, how do you survive in that socialist miasma?
Yeah, and the Republicans are trying to just put a stop
today.
To all of it.
Go ahead, Gary.
Can you hear me?
Yeah,
can you hear me?
Can you hear him?
Okay.
Oh, he's silent. All right, go ahead, Gary, because otherwise Mike can't hear you. I don't know why. I mean, his hearing's not great to start with. So what's happening in Minnesota? Why did you move from wonderful Arizona up to Minnesota? And how are things going?
Well, it's we've been homeless for about a week and a half, 2 weeks.
I moved to a Democratic state, country. Mike, and he's already homeless.
we signed a very big check today, so we will no longer be homeless. But even in Minnesota, the schools are fully funded. There's money for roads. There's money to do a lot of things. It seems that there's a new effort to put a stop to it. We can't have that. We want to go back to the old ways where the taxes go down, but the fees go up and all of the services go down. So it'll be a critical election, I think.
All right. So you have an election coming up in Minnesota. We have Doug Ballard here, who's on the Democratic National Committee. Do you have any questions? I don't know if he has his earphones are working.
No, his aren't working.
But if you have a question, we can put it to Doug, and then we'll answer it for you.
Well, my big question is with the DNC is
exactly what's up with the Democrats.
When are they going to have the? When is the leadership going to have the courage of its convictions? Because I drove, driving across country. I don't have satellite radio, so I listened to talk radio the entire way, and the talk radio is universally right wing and universally angry, and you're hard pressed to find a Democratic thought or a liberal thought in middle America, and it seems like the party has totally abandoned it and allowed the Republicans to gain a huge structural advantage.
Well, I think you're right, and I think you're going to see that change, and I think we're seeing that change right now with Tom Perez and Keith Ellison both really talking about getting back to the grassroots, getting back in touch with the voters. I think the party took certain segments of the voting population for granted, and that was a terrible mistake. And I think you're going to see that change. I think everyone realizes that really grassroots organizing, supporting our state and local parties, those who are most in touch with the people, having dialogue. Communication and listening to people and what their needs and concerns are is what we had gotten away from and is what we're getting back to.
Well,
what's particularly troubling, Doug, is that like I said, as I drive across country.
Okay, I'm sorry.
As I drove across country, virtually all of the talk radio is right wing, and there's almost nobody. Other than the show that we're on, almost nobody standing up and trying to communicate what Democrats believe in, and I don't know how you change that. The party so far has shown no interest in supporting it, programs like ours, and I just think as long as we just cede the airwaves to the right wing, we're not going to win.
No, I understand, and I think what we're seeing really is what one of the things that the chairman asked. There are about 450, 460 DNC members around the country, and we've been asked and charged with getting out and doing appearing on programs like this. There are other opportunities, radio stations, especially in rural areas where perhaps we can get on and have our voices heard or really just interact with people. And certainly we're subject to criticism just like anybody else, and we need to listen and we need to respond. And so I'm really excited about you know, the charge that we have as DNC members to really start getting out into the community and being much more transparent, much more accessible. And so I think you're going to start seeing that. I really do.
We'll allow you one more question because we know that you have to get back to paying your high Minnesota taxes.
That's
and,
right.
And,
that's
and
right.
Writing yeah. those checks for government things like, well, education and social welfare and roads and, you know, all that, that unnecessary spending that you do up there in the far mid northwest east central.
From what I can tell, our taxes aren't going to go up, from what they were in Arizona, at least not significantly. But our costs are actually seemingly going to drop, and it's really, you know, I'm still puzzled, having lived in Minnesota for many years, then lived in Arizona for you know, going on 12 years, and back in Minnesota, I'm still puzzled where the money goes in Arizona. It's you know, there's a fraction of the roads there. The schools are not funded. There's less maintenance for the roads because there aren't the extreme weather changes. And it just is puzzling to me. As I paid my taxes there, where does it go?
Well, I think if I could jump in, I think part of what is happening in Arizona is it's going to fund the holes that are left when special tax breaks are given to different special interests and things like that. And it increases the tax burden on the common person. That's been going on in Arizona for quite some time, and that needs to stop.
Yeah, it's a base level of support, as opposed to anything, you know, progressive at all. We want to make sure we recognize, while Gary's on the phone here, that we have sponsors. We have El Portal, a little boutique hotel here up on the over by Las Abrigadas, and has a wonderful breakfast every morning. We want to mention Democrats of the Red Rocks as longtime supporters of Democratic Perspective. All right, Gary, so when are you coming down to visit?
Well, hopefully we'll be there in December and stay for a few
months. Oh, December, that's unusual. Nobody goes to Arizona
regular...
in December. No, go ahead. Sorry.
Hopefully we'll make that a regular occurrence, but
All right.
maybe we'll be down to visit sooner. But I'm already missing the show. I'm already missing you guys. And sitting here in a cloudy, foggy, rainy day, I'm already missing the sunshine.
Well, our guest today is Doug Ballard on the Democratic National Committee. Before that beautiful warm speech, Gary, we were going to replace you with him as one of the stars here, the big stars of Democratic Perspective, the voice of democracy in rural Arizona.
But, we'll let you go, and you can spend your money on heating your little homeless shelter and I know that you're busy with that stuff.
And buy one of those grow lights so you can keep from being depressed.
Do stay in touch and call in and we'll be in touch and we'll have you back on the show in December. Huh?
Okay, great. Thanks.
Okay, take care,
Gary.
Thanks for calling.
Bye, Gary.
All right. Bye-bye.
All right, let's back to what the Democratic Party has been up to with the Democratic National. We have Doug Ballard, chairman, a member of the Democratic National Committee. There's one of these shadow organizations that run the political parties of the country that a lot of people don't know about, or at least they know about but don't know much about.
I would ask him, Mike, what you're talking about, Doug, is I know there's deep skepticism about the DNC, the Democratic Party as an organization, among activists, young and old, and middle-aged, everybody. There's deep questions about what the National Party, where it's going and what it's doing, the feeling that it's run by a kind of you know, they're nice people, but it's kind of an ingrown establishment. That, and I know you're going around listening, but is the DNC going to listen to the party? Because as we said, there are people who are upset. There's a lot of people who really just don't understand how what the DNC is and what the Democratic Party is and how freeform it is.
Well, I think, you know, there's good reason for concern. You know, I think the way the DNC handled the primary election between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders was not good, to be kind about it. That chair, was let go. Debbie Wasserman Schultz, Donna Brazile served as interim chair, and she was just wonderful. I got to know her and work with her a little bit. And I think she really started to lay the groundwork, for what, you know, Chairman Perez and Deputy Chair Ellison would do. One of the things that one of the reasons I voted for Keith Ellison, for example, was the need to open the party up and bring activists into the party. And even though Keith did not win, I'm very, very happy with Tom Perez, and I think he is opening those doors. And one of the neat things, as a little side indicator, is I think we have the youngest group of officers elected to the DNC than I think we've ever had. And so you have a lot of new young energy. We're really reaching out to the activist organizations, whatever they may be, you know, Move On, whatever. We're working on and trying to and are opening the doors.
Yeah, thank you for mentioning the Bernie and Hillary issue during the during the campaign and the eventual loss, Hillary's eventual loss. Because it meant a lot to a lot of people, and it Bernie's, as you know, I'm going to repeat again, Bernie's candidacy inspired a lot of people, and to have what at least a highly publicized, who knows what was true, what was not, political dealings between those candidates, and to have Bernie perhaps have the nomination taken away from him really, really, really bothered a lot of people under 50 anyway, and the kind of lost, the Democratic Party kind of lost some shine during that time. Now, I have to admit, it's hard to see going forward here, and we've got plenty of time left. You got this maniacal regime. I mean, I can say stuff like that. You got this regime of con men and liars. How can the Democrats not do well here? What can we? Now, don't get me wrong. I guess there's a way to screw this up, but God. Doug, please don't screw this up. We're blaming you.
Yeah, you're responsible for the Democratic Party. Where do we go from here, Doug? The Bernie Hillary thing is done. We need to learn from that and we need to move on.
Right. Well, unity is going to be our biggest strength, or lack of unity will be our biggest detriment. And that's one of the things that we're really trying to do, is bring everyone together. I think we're seeing a real groundswell of grassroots support, and I think the party is a part of that, and needs to be a part of that. Do we need to lead it? No, I think we need to be a part and partner, an equal partner with all these organizations. So we're not just this top-down structure, but we're much more, I think, democratically organized. If I could, I think the midterm elections will be a big test. We have a great race now in the Georgia 6th congressional district, which has been a rock solid Republican district. We have a candidate now who is looking to take that seat, and we're very, very excited about that. Right now, they're looking pretty good.
This is Ossoff? What's this?
Ossoff, yeah. Right.
Ossoff.
They're looking pretty good, and so that could be a little bit of a bellwether for us. But I think what's really, really encouraging for me and encouraging for other party people is a level of activism has been growing exponentially because of this existential threat to our very democratic systems. I mean, and I won't get into all the details, but I mean, we're in an historical time right now, and the country can go one of two ways, and and it's a very frightening thing. And so people are getting up and getting out and getting involved and getting active. We have new organizations coming up that are actively trying to engage their Republican or Democratic elected officials in town halls and things like that. And so the resist movement, I think, is a big part of it. Now, what has to come part and parcel with that is the ability of the party to effectively communicate our values, our strategies, the things that we hold dear. And so it's not just the resist movement, it's also the party putting together a very effective and compelling vision for this country.
I have used the resist bot several times, by the way, in the last week or so. 50409 will get you, and you type resist and follow the directions, and we should talk about this at length sometime.
Yes. Democratic perspective.
I've had a great time doing
the resistance in northern Arizona on the air.
We do want to talk about Doug Ballard's here from Democratic National Committee. What about some of these high profile Republican defections, or is this just internet stuff, clickbait? Michael J. Fox, some other high-profile Republicans that have made a big deal out of leaving the Republican Party in the last 8 weeks.
Well, I think you're going to see that grow, and you're seeing in Congress and in the Senate, people peel away from the Trump administration. You know, John McCain, Lindsey Graham, and others. Who are very, very concerned about not just what's happening domestically, but really what's happening in terms of our position in the world and how that's being undermined by the current president. And so I think you're going to continue to see those things happen. I know Chaffetz from Utah was on regarding the Russia probe, and he said some very strong things that I'm sure the president didn't like. And so I think you're going to see that happening more and more.
That's
and, of
great.
Course, the health care debacle, and there's no way you could characterize it other than a debacle, really shows the great and deep and, you know, perhaps unrepairable fissures within the Republican Party. And so they've shown certainly a great ability to obstruct, but they've shown no ability that I've been able to discern that they're able to govern. And so I think that's where we come in.
Well, what has the DNC done to protect itself from Russian hackers that are supporting Republicans for whatever reason?
Well, yeah, we've done a full review. We've hired the best firms and consultants available to try to put together a robust and secure system. I'm not a techie guy, so I can't really comment on the specifics, but I just know that that's a very, very high priority, probably the highest priority within the party now.
Because it's not just a Democratic issue. If foreign countries can come in and alter our election, that's a real existential threat to our democracy, right?
Well, it is, and if there was collusion, and this is probably going to seem as a bit of a controversial comment, but I can't help but think that treason and comes into play when we have people colluding with a hostile foreign power to alter our democratic processes. I don't know what else to call it but treason.
It sure sounds like it. You know, when you have business people at such a level that governments mean nothing, That's treason. Yeah, they are so far out there that they don't have the kind of patriotism that we feel, the connection we feel to the country.
What about the Trump administration, Trump's relatives and friends using the whole United States government to increase their wealth and make connections and pay people off? I mean, it's an astonishing level of corruption, and they've only been in office, I don't know, 71 days or whatever it is.
Well, part of it has to do with, I think, a feeling among some that government needs to be run as a business. Well, a business is governed by the profit motive. That's not what governs government. What governs government is doing the will of the people and providing for a safe and secure environment and dealing with the challenges that we have, be they healthcare, be they environmental degradation, being whatever they may be, education. That's what government's about, and you don't make money off of doing that. And so I think you have people now that are that are in positions of power whose sole experience has been making money for themselves and for their company. And so
almost none of them, I mean, Trump is an exception, I will say, almost none of them made money doing anything like Apple computers or making widgets or doing steel. They made money manipulating the monetary system. Most of the wealthy people he's brought into government. There seems to be no, I mean, you seem to be able to, Doug, to expose over and over again what's happening, and yet nothing changes.
Well, I think things are changing. I really do. And I think just looking at the different town halls that are around and people who have never been, and what we're seeing in Coconino County, what we're seeing at the state party, what we're seeing at the DNC, is people who have never been involved politically before are getting involved. And that is perhaps the best thing that's coming out of this.
One of the things I'd like to mention with Doug here is that according to Alan Wolf and others, the United States is liberal at its very core. We were created as a liberal democracy. The world envies us. The reason they wanted to come here is because we were a liberal democracy. And that as such, to lose that, what the Republicans are now talking about are constitutional conventions, because America at its core was created as a liberal democracy. The only way to change that is with constitutional conventions, whether it's state or national. And they saw that, and they saw that 30 years ago. So they started taking over the state legislatures. As you said, you had these billionaires that fund these campaigns so incredibly well. The Democrats' only answer, and it was great to hear it, by the way, from that our answer to the big money, to the dark money, to Citizens United, the debacle of Citizens United, is organization. It's people getting involved, and it's organization, and it's little radio shows, and it's little new letters to the editor, and it's postings on Facebook and Twitter and every other social media that you can find.
Contributions to all kinds of progressive
causes. And send me $3.
Nobody wants to talk about it, but the truth is that there's two things that you can do. I mean, or, well, there are many things, but you can talk to your friends and encourage them. But you really, at this point, looking at the Trump administration and the disaster that it is, people have to get involved. And whether that's, you know, no one wants to talk about giving money, but you have to give money to support organizations who are doing the research into what's going on, for example. Just one thing. ProPublica is excellent publications, nonpartisan, but they research what's going on in government. So there's two things you can do. One is to volunteer your time, right, Doug? And that the Democrats are strongest in. And the other is, I mean, how many little $20 contributions does it take to make up somebody handing them $2 million? Well, we got to do it anyway, even though it's like one little piece at a time, right?
Well, that's right. That's right. And I think a big part of this that the party is realizing is that we need to inspire, and we need to communicate, and we need to provide that vision where we can take the energy that we're seeing now in resisting Trump and turn that into a real positive movement for progressive change. And
I think that's the most difficult thing, don't you?
That is. That's what takes the pros. That's what the pros can do is take exactly what Doug Ballard just said. Take that all this energy against Trump, and it is frightening, and it is scary, and all of the things, the changes that we're seeing in the life that we've come to know. And take that energy and challenge it and channel it into a positive political force. You know, one of the other things, liberals and Democrats in general believe that rules guide us. Mm-hmm. And that there's a such thing as a neutral rule. There's rules kind of like this show. We're not all that progressive that
reactionary.
Rules can guide us, and there's a neutral rule that would be a beneficial to both sides, to Republicans. Republicans, conservatives see any rule, any regulation as the domination of one party over another. In other words, if you get your rule in, then somehow we lost. And Democrats don't see it that way. And that's why we like Democrats. That's why I'm a Democrat.
Well, they don't believe it should be that way. Don't we have a mix of both rules coming down that benefit a tiny minority, usually very wealthy people because they have the power and the money? And then we have a fight to establish fair rules, like fair elections. I mean, that's the most important thing, is that we have fair elections in the United States. I don't know what you do with somebody like Citizen United, which has empowered the super wealthy to be able to, I mean, these people have more money, I think, collectively than the rest of us all put together. What can you do about that, Doug? I know that that's the biggest question, but you're representative of to the DNC now.
Well, I think, you know, clearly Citizens United is the greatest threat, one of the greatest threats anyway. We're a couple now, one's in the White House, to our democracy. And we obviously have to work toward overthrowing that. That's not going to happen overnight. When I say overturning it, you know, Congress has the ability to do certain things.
That's
and then,
right.
And then, of course, starting to get better Supreme Court justices on the court, I think, is a big part too. But, you know, basically what Citizens United has done is it's given an incredibly amplified voice to a very small group of people. And they do that through money, because Citizens United determined that money is speech and corporations are people. And that I think is a great threat to our democratic system, and I think it dilutes and outshouts the voice of the common person. And
they're already spending millions and millions of dollars to support Donald Trump's programs in health care, and they're already advertising in against senators from more conservative states, Democratic senators from more conservative states. It's already going on. There are already millions of dollars. There's two or three of these dark money groups already trying to help move the Trump collection of strange propositions forward.
Well, you know, and it's really insidious because you're seeing it at the local level now, too. We have an Americans for Prosperity office that opened in Flagstaff. One reason is because Flagstaff and Coconino County and Sedona, I think too, is seen as a liberal bastion, and they want to pull the rug out from under that. And so it's really insidious, and it's really pursuing the aims of two individuals, the Koch brothers, and the amount of influence that Citizens United has allowed these people to have should be extraordinarily frightening to every person, Democrat and Republican. So
will the Republicans, we're running out of timer, will the Republicans do anything to get Gorsuch on the Supreme Court? Will they do the nuclear option?
Well, I'm not close to that per se, but everything I'm seeing indicates that they will.
Okay. All right, folks. We've been talking to Doug Ballard, a member of the Democratic National Committee, held a lot of state offices in the Arizona Democratic Party, a lot of local offices in the Coconino Democratic Party, and he's been our guest this morning, and he was a speaker here and will be a speaker again. He is our go-to inside man. There's a lot that's going to be happening in Democratic politics, both state and national, and Doug is going to be in the middle of it. We want to thank our sponsors, El Portal, Democrats of the Red Rocks, and please don't forget, this and all our shows are available by podcast on vvid.org. You can catch this show and all our shows in a few days anyway in VVID.org, VVID.org. Thanks, folks. It's beautiful out there.
been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news and our Saturday replay after the noon news right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.